Zika, which has been spreading rapidly throughout Latin America, has been linked to birth defects in Brazil, and an infection has already been confirmed in the United States. But it's just the latest pandemic to make headlines around the world. In the last few years, others include Ebola, swine flu, SARS, and MRSA. But could we prevent such outbreaks in the future before they happen? Here to talk about the diseases of today and tomorrow is Dr. Stephen S. Morse, a professor of epidemiology at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University and formerly the co-director of the USAID Predict Project. I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show. Hello.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
I'm sure our listeners have a pretty good idea of what a virus is and how some of them cause us to get sick, but is there anything else that we should know about them for the purpose of this discussion?
Well, I think one of the important things is that there are many viruses out there. We've lived with and perhaps in some cases not knowing about them for a long time.
Aren't they in our genetic code, in fact?
There are pieces of viruses in our genetic code, and one of the issues that has been debated for a long time was which came first. Did the viruses escape from our genomes or from genomes of the species they may now inhabit or infect, or was it the other way around? They embedded themselves there. And it's kind of a chicken or egg question, but it's a fascinating issue to know, you know, where these viruses came from in the first place.
So most of the viruses don't cause any problems?
Most of us live with a number of viruses. For example, there are 8 known human herpes viruses, and most of us are probably carrying around at least half of them. Chickenpox, for example, which is extremely common, herpes simplex, and a number of others, and hardly ever notice it.
So in other words, if I had chickenpox in the past, I still have chickenpox virus in my body. If I once had a cold sore, it's likely that I have some kind of a herpes virus in my body?
Yeah, the herpes viruses have become very adept at staying in the body, hiding out in certain cells for life. And so, you know, if someone has chickenpox as a child, about 10% of those people later on will get shingles later in life from the same original infection.
When chickenpox was much more common, would we have called it a pandemic?
Well, I think a lot of these, you know, very, very common infections are, in essence, pandemic because they're all over the world. You know,
we've measles just taken, is a pandemic?
Measles, indeed. And when I was growing up, I'm old enough to have had measles, there were 450,000 cases or so a year in the United States alone. And now, you know, if there are 40 or 100 cases, we are understandably, I think, very concerned. So all of these infections that have become so distributed around the world are sort of the pandemics of the past, if you will. They're historical, but they've been with us for a long time, so we take them for granted.
But the ones that we talk about today are Ebola, SARS, Zika. Should we be calling Lyme disease a pandemic?
Ah, that's an interesting question. It's very widely distributed, as you know, and, you know, I think it depends on your definition of pandemic. Most epidemiologists would say a pandemic is an epidemic, an occurrence of an infection that's just geographically widespread. And by that definition, I suppose we could call a lot of things pandemics. The problem, of course, is that the word has a certain connotation to the general public. And so when you think of a pandemic, you think of some of the things you see on television or the movie Contagion, something that just spreads through the population, you know, devouring all in its path, the Andromeda strain. And most pandemics, in a sense, are, there may be some like that, the Black Death of the 14th century, bubonic plague. Most HIV, which has been a very slow moving pandemic, but clearly a pandemic and a deadly one until good therapeutics were developed. But most pandemics really, you know, are just infections that do get widely distributed. So a flu pandemic, the last one everyone, you know, felt was sort of a mild pandemic, you know. So
it hasn't, only the Spanish flu of World War I is one that seemed to have really been destructive.
The worst natural disaster, in fact, in history. If World War I hadn't happened at the same time, we'd be talking, you know, about that as a natural disaster. And there are a lot of people who think that, in fact, bringing the 1918 Spanish flu over from the U.S., where it was raging at the time, to Europe was one of the things that actually ended the war because everybody got sick. But other pandemics of influenza, you know, they vary, and we have never predicted one with any accuracy at all.
Well, Zika suddenly is upon us. Could it have been predicted?
We knew the virus existed. It actually had been discovered through a project called the Rockefeller Foundation Virus Program, which was doing virus hunting in a more old-fashioned way back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And it was found in Uganda, in the Zika forest, in a monkey, as were a number of these other viruses we hear about. So we knew it was there, but we have not really known where it would go, and it's often a matter of chance.
Was there a major outbreak of Zika in Uganda? Because I mean, the first time I've heard about it is from Brazil and Latin America.
Yeah, Zika was circulating around and, you know, really not causing, not getting much attention in Africa, and then it moved about 10 years ago to Polynesia and has been circulating there, very similar to what it's been doing essentially in Latin America, but on a smaller scale because those islands are more spread out. And people used to think of this as a mild disease, and until we saw some of these very serious consequences, you know, it was really like sort of getting the flu, but for some people more painful.
Did Zika come from another species? So often these pandemics seem to be spread by other animals, or in this case, of course, the mosquitoes play a major role, but are the mosquitoes picking up the virus from other animals?
Undoubtedly. So, you know, Zika and many of these viruses have their own natural life cycles, and they certainly are in other species. We know about some of them, you know, West Nile in birds, for example. Zika has, I think, not been as well studied. We know it has infected monkeys. We don't know if that's the actual natural host, as we would call it, the source that, you know, probably tolerates the infection and carries it around, but also can infect mosquitoes, and then you can get a cycle in humans of mosquito transmission.
But different than malaria in transmitting. Malaria is not a virus?
Malaria is a protozoan parasite, and a very wily one at that. But
is that a pandemic?
I think it would be fair. You know, it's been around for a long time, you know, thousands of years, if not more. And I think it's fair to call it a pandemic because it is so widespread. But it's not a pandemic today. It is pandemic, if you will, in the sense that it's all over the place. But malaria, at least the most serious one, falciparum species, is really, at this point, adapted to humans. So, you know, we're the major hosts, and this is why people talk about the possibility of trying to eradicate malaria. All you have to do is prevent people from getting infected or prevent infected people from being bitten by the right mosquitoes. These are different mosquitoes than the ones that carry Zika. But it's been a real challenge. Obviously both the microbe and the mosquito are very good survivors.
My guest is Dr. Stephen S. Morse, professor of epidemiology at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Different species of mosquitoes carry different illnesses. Are any carried by all kinds of mosquitoes? I've always wondered why mosquitoes even exist. I can come up with an excuse for almost everything on Earth, but not mosquitoes.
Yeah, so
mosquitoes, you know, and cockroaches.
Yeah, so for those who you know, believe that everything has a purpose, I guess, you know, there are some things that don't seem to fit, and I guess depending on your point of view, you know, either they evolved that way or there's some mysterious purpose. I tend to think it's just, you know, the result of evolution. And mosquitoes, I had thought that perhaps mosquitoes could be food sources for other animals, mm-hmm. like insectivorous bats or something like that. But people tell me that that's not even apparently a major function they serve. So they're doing well on their own. There are a number of viruses that are fairly promiscuous, if I may use that word, in the mosquitoes that they're able to infect. West Nile, one in Africa called Rift Valley, can infect a number of different mosquitoes. Others are much more specialized. Some of the malaria, a number of these viruses we're talking about, like Zika, yellow fever, dengue, are all really in one mosquito, Aedes aegypti, and maybe some other species.
But the mosquitoes that we tend to have in the metropolitan area come during the humid days, they're not necessarily disease carriers?
Most are not, although they...
Annoying.
They are annoying, and they are obviously very successful because we know about them, especially, you know, those who walk through our beautiful parks. They're usually... Culex mosquitoes, that's the scientific name, and they have been implicated in the transmission of West Nile, for example. But until then, there really wasn't much that was a human disease concern.
Don't environmental health experts say there's a good chance that infectious diseases like Zika will become more common as the climate changes, gets warmer?
Well, we do know that as climates get warmer in some places, mosquitoes, for example, that used to be only at certain altitudes are now able to move further up the mountain because it's warmer and they're no longer inhibited by the cold temperatures. So that's one of the first things people look for when they think about global warming or climate change. But there are many other effects that I think are unanticipated, in part because, you know, we haven't done a very good job of predicting all the outcomes. I mean, look at Zika, for example. When Zika came along, there had been an outbreak before that of something called chikungunya. You may remember that, which is causes joint pains and some other things. It was moving a little more slowly in the same area. And there were a lot of people who breathed a sigh of relief and said, including the Brazilian health ministry, who said, oh, well, Zika's mild compared to chikungunya, thank goodness. So be careful what you wish for. But I think that the changes in the climate will make major differences in distribution of disease.
Will we see more diseases pop up as a result of deforestation as well as warmer weather?
Yes, I think that's absolutely true. Deforestation and many other types of land use change have been associated with these infections. Basically, you know, what I called emerging viruses or emerging infections a number of years ago, like most microbiologists and virologists, I thought it had something to do with the way these viruses rapidly evolve, you know, the sort of Andromeda-like quality. But the reality is most of them are already there somewhere else in nature, in another species, and we just haven't really stumbled on them. So if deforestation, environmental changes could easily allow these infections to gain access to humans, and then it's a matter of whether they can establish themselves and spread further. That was the big surprise with Ebola, which is spread person to person and doesn't spread that readily, but we never expected, and we should have not been complacent about the possibility of a really big outbreak if it got into an urban area.
Have we failed at containing Ebola?
Well, I think Ebola is in the environment, probably originally from bats, although that's not entirely certain. Some of its relatives, most closely related virus, is. And it's probably fairly widely distributed because it keeps popping up, or, various varieties of Ebola keep popping up in places like Uganda, where before 2001, no one knew it was there. So I think it's probably there in the environment, and what happens is suddenly somebody stumbles upon it in the forest or wherever.
Can some of the contributing reasons for a pandemic be surprising? I've read that the global used tire trade may be a factor because researchers have observed mosquitoes breeding in pools of water that form in the hollows of the tires while they're sitting outside, and then the tires are shipped to another country, and they bring along the mosquitoes that are carrying the diseases to foreign populations that may not even have developed an immunity to them.
That's absolutely true, and in fact, for a long time, the mosquito we were worried about with yellow fever, dengue, now Zika, and chikungunya and all these other things in tropical areas was Aedes aegypti, which was actually brought over to the New World through the African slave trade along with yellow fever. More recently, in the 1980s, a related mosquito called Aedes albopictus, the Asian tiger mosquito, actually was brought into Houston and a number of cities all over the world, actually, Lagos, Rio, through, in fact, used tires. And the eggs were there, and when they got wet, the mosquitoes bred. And this species, Aedes albopictus, is now well established in a number of places, including many parts of the United States as far north as Chicago. So there's some concern about, what that might be able to do, although it's not as efficient as aegypti at carrying disease.
Mosquitoes thrive in warmer and humid climates and prolonged warm seasons, increase their breeding season. But can't temperatures sometimes get too high and kill them off?
Oh, yes. And
so global warming, if it really is effective, is going to kill mosquitoes in Houston in the near future?
Assuming that we can still afford to air condition so it doesn't kill us first. Yeah, actually, for the many of the tropical mosquitoes especially, the warmer it is, the shorter their lifespan. So, but they, even though they may only live a few days to a week, they are very active during that period.
And it's only the female mosquito that bites us.
Absolutely. The males are, as usual, just sort of, well, in this case, they're in the background. But the mosquito, the female mosquito, needs something from our hemoglobin in order for the eggs to mature. That's why they bite mammals or
so
other animals.
So we're nourishing the future mosquitoes.
Oh, yes. And that's exactly right. So every time a mosquito bites us, the unfortunate feeling is that, there you are contributing to their next generation, which means more mosquitoes next year.
And sometimes as a favor, they give us something like a Zika virus.
Yeah.
There was a lot of concern about SARS. How dangerous did that disease turn out to be?
Well, and I think it's an indication of our, general vulnerability to infections that we may not be aware of, or we may be aware of, but aren't really able to know what's going to happen. SARS spread through many countries throughout the world, and it's one of the few events where we actually can find kind of a big bang distribution. We usually can't find the proverbial smoking gun or smoking mosquito or whatever that started the infection. But with SARS, it started in South China. Someone came, a doctor, in fact, came from, who had treated patients, came from there to Hong Kong, stayed in a hotel, and somehow about a dozen other people at the same hotel became sick and spread it to a number of other places, including very famously Toronto, mostly through the healthcare system, mostly because healthcare workers were not aware of the precautions, as we saw here with Ebola, that they needed to take.
So mosquitoes can be transmitters of a pandemic, but also just humans moving from place to place. Is that why we saw an explosion of pandemics around the time that air travel became more common?
Yes. Luc Montagnier, discoverer of the HIV, in fact, used to call the 747, the wide-body jet, the vector of HIV, the way the mosquito, is the vector, that's the term we use, of yellow fever or Zika. Indeed, there are a number of infections that are transmitted person to person, including one that was pandemic and, still is, tuberculosis. But influenza, for example, really is spread from person to person essentially in an unbroken chain because it's adapted to humans by the time it gets into us. And so travel has a lot to do with it. And, of course, so we've talked about the movement of goods like used tires and other things and globalization that can, in fact, globalize these diseases or their carriers as well, either usually inadvertently, of course.
In the case of tuberculosis, it looked like it was pretty much eliminated some years back, but it's come back. So the virus has mutated. Is that what happens with influenza, that we can never beat it back because it's going to be different all the time?
Yeah, influenza is one of the most complex. One of my former professors, Howard Temin, who actually won the Nobel Prize for his work on reverse transcriptase, the enzyme that is kind of essential to the lifestyle of retroviruses. That's why they're called retroviruses. They change their form of nucleic acid genome. But he used to say it was cheating to call influenza an emerging virus. But in fact, it's the one that probably fits all of our kind of expectations. It does do a lot of genetic changes, including swapping different parts of its genome between different influenza viruses, as well as mutating. And every so often, a successful combination comes up that can now, usually originally from waterfowl, and then usually the mixing seems to occur in pigs, and then suddenly one may reach the human population when a farmer comes by, and that one just might happen to hit the jackpot and be able to spread around the world.
So despite flu shots, people still get sick?
Yes, and we're obviously trying to think of things like universal immunizations, things that would immunize against all the different types of influenza. And that's possible in the future, but I think it still pays to be aware of these things and take precautions.
My guest is Dr. Stephen S. Morse, professor of epidemiology at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia. We are talking about pandemics, and we will continue our conversation after this break. We are back with Dr. Stephen S. Morse, a professor of epidemiology at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia, formerly the co-director of the USAID Predict Project. Now, that was hoping to predict pandemics, never really did the job it was supposed to do?
Well, it's an aspirational term, and it's always good to have aspirations. For, many years, the primary recommendation of every expert group that's ever looked at this problem has always been that we need better surveillance, better early warning and monitoring of what's out there. And in fact, back in the 1990s, some colleagues and myself started something called ProMed, the Program for Monitoring Emerging Diseases. And the email system and website has been called the CNN, if you'll forgive my mentioning that, of infectious diseases. But we still, need good early warning systems. And what USAID wanted to do there was essentially, after the experiences with avian influenza getting into humans, to have a better idea of what's out there so we could at least know sort of what the landscape is. We still, of course, to predict, need to know what things we should be most worried about and have to have some sort of rating system, if you will, to follow them.
Now, we've been talking mostly about pandemics as being viral, but in fact, I guess that's why the word viral has become so popular in other uses. But mentioned tuberculosis, that's caused by a bacillus. Can pandemics be caused by other things, bacteria and mites and whatever else we can imagine?
I tend to deal with the microscopic things, so I'll pass on the mites, but certainly we hear a lot about bed bugs and,
Would you call bed bugs a pandemic?
Well, they're all over the place. So are lice, for example, although hopefully they're rarer here than they used to be, but they also carry their own diseases, and there's a wonderful book about the history of typhus carried by lice called Rats, Lice, and History by Zinsser, one of those classics of years back. But yes, bacteria can do it too. We had the famous bubonic plague, the Black Death of the 14th century, and that was certainly one that had tremendous effects. Cholera.
Carried by fleas in that case?
Carried by fleas and coming from rodents, which are the natural hosts, and then the fleas may, for one reason or another, run out of rodents or out of rats or similar rodents and bite us, and we become infected then, and it can spread. But, that's certainly one of the best known of all, and cholera.
And I wonder why rats don't get bubonic plague, why deer don't get Lyme disease. The ticks aren't killed off by it. but it has such a terrible effect on humans.
Yeah. It's quite possible that this may have happened long ago when these species first became infected, you know, in ancient history, whenever that was. And over time, there's been a sort of evolutionary adaptation, you know, so they may still get sick. It doesn't promise that they won't get sick. But, you know, usually the ones that are most likely to die when they first encounter the disease will succumb. And then the ones that are left are more resistant. And then there's immunity that develops as the infection circulates. We see this with humans, too, after we've had a lot of experience with an infection and it's been around for a long time, the ones we take for granted as human infections.
Although, as you pointed out earlier, shingles can come after we've had a childhood disease. And one of our listeners has asked on Twitter, Dr. Janet Lee Leslie, what's the incubation period for the shingles virus once you've been exposed to someone with an active case?
Oh, that really varies. So what happens is that, you know, someone will get chickenpox in childhood, and that now there are now vaccines for that, but it used to be considered fairly mild, so people didn't worry about it, you know. And then years later, for one reason or another, we don't understand all the reasons, perhaps waning immunity or something that some other illness, immunosuppression, shingles comes on, the virus gets reactivated from nerve cells. Adults who have not had chickenpox before will get primary chickenpox. The incubation period usually is between 1 to 3 weeks, and that is bad. You don't want to get that if you can avoid it. It's nastier than it is in
children.
But there's
a shingles vaccine.
There is a vaccine both.
Which is very expensive. I wonder why, since it's so common.
Yeah, the
are we going to blame Shkreli for this as well?
No. It took a while to develop, and obviously there are market forces at work. Luckily, it's not hopefully quite in that category. But there's also a chickenpox vaccine for children, which is basically the same as the shingles vaccine, but less concentrated.
Now, it's been the Zika has been linked to babies being born with smaller heads and brains that aren't fully developed. Does anyone understand the process, what happens in the womb?
No, we do know, I think, that, you know, both from experimental work and from some work that's been done during this outbreak, that the virus can infect the central nervous system and it can get into the brain of developing fetuses.
This leads to microcephaly?
And this may cause developmental abnormalities. But we haven't really known for sure. We still don't know for sure, you know, whether this microcephaly we're seeing is all caused by Zika. There may be other causes that are not Zika. And there's now an argument that some of these cases may actually not be microcephaly, may actually be normal. But usually you want to cast a wider net to make sure you pick up all the cases so you can study them and rule out things. But there are other causes as well. So, you know, whether Zika's doing it by itself, how often Zika is doing it, we don't know. I would guess if it is, it's by getting into the fetus and into the developing brain, but we don't have direct proof, except we know it can do that.
Are there similar diseases?
Yes, there are a number, you know, and not just viral, but, you know, you think about toxoplasmosis, which is another one of those parasites, and is sometimes seen as an opportunistic infection in the old days in AIDS patients. That was actually...
Well, people don't die of AIDS. They die of the fact that their immune system has been weakened so that something else like pneumonia will actually be the cause of death.
Exactly, and many other things that, you know, could hasten death as a result of the weakened immune system. We still are only beginning to understand what causes the immune system collapse, because that's a very unusual thing. But toxoplasmosis, which is often, you know, very, very mild infection, in certain stages of pregnancy, in pregnant women, can in fact cause fetal deformities. And we know about rubella, of course, another virus. All of these are unrelated to each other, but they are all capable of causing various abnormalities.
Well, rubella itself is German measles, which was the mildest illness I ever had. But it can lead to autism if a woman is pregnant and gets it?
It can lead to a number of different effects.
I mean, autism in the child.
Yes, and, you know, many other developmental problems that have been known for a long time, even before we diagnosed autism routinely. So that's also vaccine preventable. And in New York, for example, it's extremely rare. It doesn't occur here. Naturally, we see imported cases every so often.
A listener asks, is the Zika virus the kind of virus that stays in your body like HPV or chickenpox, or does it go away once you recover?
I think most of these viruses actually do go away. They may persist in certain sequestered places. This is why we hear about the sexual transmission, because testes is one of the places that the immune system doesn't patrol regularly. We call those immunologically privileged. So is the brain. But in general, I think in the vast majority of cases, when it's over, it's over. It stays in the body for a few weeks, perhaps, and then you're over it. And that's true of many of these infections. The ones like the herpes viruses we talked about, HIV and some of the others, are specialized to stay in our body. So they make a specialty of that. Most of the other viruses probably just come and go.
Well, you specialize in the surveillance of diseases. What sort of surveillance systems do we currently have in place?
Well, there are a number of different kinds of surveillance systems. And one of the problems, and this is, I think, one of the issues that USAID developed the PREDICT project to address, is that they're all very fragmented. So there may be disease-specific surveillance systems in countries that are looking, or even states in the United States, that have particular priorities. Some of them will give a higher priority to infectious disease surveillance than others. So in many cases, you know, if you're looking for polio, you may not be picking up the cases of microcephaly until it becomes, because that's not what you're looking for, until it becomes impossible to miss. So I think one of the things we have to do is really share the information better and do this in a more widespread way. That's why we started ProMed, and now this can be done with mobile phones, even at the local level.
Can we trace the source of the virus in this case by the species of mosquito that's carrying it? Because isn't it an African mosquito? Wouldn't that be a clue?
We do think, because we first found this West Nile, which is another mosquito, yellow fever.
There's Asian tiger mosquitoes that carry some of these illnesses?
That's been an interesting subject. I think, and this is a personal opinion, that the Asian tiger mosquito can, but it may not be as effective at doing it as Aedes aegypti. So some viruses, wherever they come from, you know, may be able to infect other local mosquitoes, but they need the right mosquito if they're transmitted by mosquitoes. If they can't find it, which is why I think Zika is not likely to gain a foothold here in New York, even though we will and have already seen imported cases. But I don't think we have the right mosquitoes here, unlike the tropics, unlike some parts of the southern U.S.
Dr. Stephen S. Morse is a professor of epidemiology at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia, formerly the co-director of the USAID PREDICT project. And I thank you so much for coming by today to talk about Zika and other pandemics.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.